So last night I mentioned that spiritual receptivity informs all aspects of our practice, all aspects of our lives, but is also supported by a number of factors. You'll know that Sangharakshita has laid out our system of practice. One way of looking at it is in terms of a mandala. Can't really work with flip charts and things here, so let's just use the whole shrine room as a sort of image. So in the centre of the mandala is spiritual receptivity, complete openness to the Dharma, completely permeated by the Dharma. And the main practice connected with that is just sitting, which is what we'll mainly be focusing on during the retreat. But just sitting as a practice, so to speak, is just a way of feeling our way into a way of living. So it's something that we're carrying on all through the day, all through our life, not just sitting on a cushion. But then just sitting and spiritual receptivity are supported by the different sides of the mandala. So on one side of the mandala we have the whole aspect of integration. So that could be the side where you came in, where the doors are, because you have to kind of start with a degree of integration. If you have no integration, you have no continuity of awareness, and so your practice is at best very sort of fits and starts. Integration includes all sorts of aspects, including ethics and so on. It's also about becoming grounded in your direct experience. So a good place to start with integration is with the body. So today we're going to be looking at aspects of integration in relation to just sitting and spiritual receptivity. But carrying on, just to give us a picture of where we're headed. So then in the back of the room, with the sunlight streaming through the windows, that is positive emotion. That's what's coming through the windows there, is the sunlight of positive emotion. So spiritual receptivity is also about open-heartedness. It's about turning towards ourselves, our experience, other people and life with an open heart. And the more positive emotion we have, the easier it is to just sit, the easier it is to cultivate that complete openness to life. And then over following on round, the next side of the mandala, we have insight, spiritual death. I'm not sure I can relate that to the fire box up there or anything. Anyway, yep. So on this side we have insight and spiritual death. The letting go of assumptions about how life is, which get in the way of being open to how it really is. We live most of the time in a world of stories and assumptions. There's a sort of wallpaper of concepts that stand between us and experience, stand between us and other people. So work on insight, on spiritual death, helps us to see through those concepts, those assumptions, and to be receptive to what's actually there, what's actually the case. And as we do that, then there's a spiritual rebirth, an opening to depths of the Dharma, an opening to the Bodhisattva ideal, and we can feel very blessed. We can feel that life has become full of blessings, that life has become full of adhisthana. So the fourth side of the mandala is where the shrine is here, with all these many Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And with those four aspects, integration, positive emotion, insight, spiritual death, and spiritual rebirth, out of those, supported by those, comes deep spiritual receptivity. So that's the itinerary for these few days. We're going to be looking at those different sides of the mandala, and all in relation to just sitting. The main... I'll just talk a little bit more, just to give us some background before we look particularly at integration. The main obstacle to our being open and receptive to our experience, to the Dharma, to other people, to life, is that we organise our experience in terms of a self, a me, at the centre of a world. And once we've done that, there's a constant tension. It's as if, in a way, we're seeing as we're talking in terms of mandalas, let's carry on that image. Years ago, Sangharakshita talked about personal mandalas, where you could, it was kind of a way of just looking at how your life was at the time. You could put everything which was really important to you in your life somewhere on a big piece of paper and sort of see how it related, how the different things related to one another. And he was saying, well, you could put what's most important to you near the centre and what's less important more towards the periphery. And in that way you can get a sense of, you know, what does your life consist of? And what's really important to you? Are the things that are really important to you at the centre of your mandala? So one of the things he naturally said was that if you put yourself at the centre of the mandala, then the mandala doesn't work. So actually, moment by moment, we are creating a way of experiencing the world whereby there's a sense of me at the centre of experience and there is a world around outside. And that way of functioning is entirely natural, entirely human, but horrible. because it causes suffering. Yeah, because we've mistaken the nature of our experience and we feel that there is some kind of a self or a me in the centre of our experience, standing behind our experience, then automatically we feel that that's because we've identified with these five skandhas, then everything else has become other. So we have a divided mandala. We have a mandala with a me at the centre, sort of feeling separate from all the rest of the mandala, from everything around. And that's a very uncomfortable way to be. And because that's uncomfortable, then we react to that by craving, trying to sort of pull some bits of the mandala closer to us, which make us feel secure, and pushing other bits away that make us feel insecure. So we have a mandala sort of at war with itself, a mandala of awareness, a mandala of mind that's very unhappy. But then we come to practice the Dharma and we realise that something's got to change, that way of working is never going to satisfy us. And we'll be a nuisance to ourselves and the world if we keep operating like that. So the me at the centre of the mandala sort of reforms itself and it starts to become much more positive and to take care of the mandala around it. It starts to cooperate with other people. It starts to practice the precepts. It starts to be generous and kind. And that's an absolutely wonderful thing. You know, even a small amount of practice of the precepts is already a gift to the world. But still, even though we can go a long way down the spiritual path in this way, you know, me striving to gain enlightenment, striving to overcome my negative tendencies, finally, we have to go through an even deeper transformation whereby we let go of creating a sense of me at the centre of the world at all. Because as long as there is a sense of me at the centre of the world, there's always going to be at least subtle sense of dividedness, some subtle sense of cut-offness, subtle sense of aloneness. As long as we're just identified with the five skandhas, there's always going to be at least the third level of dukkha, of suffering. There's going to be that existential dukkha of feeling cut off. And as long as we're striving for a future goal, there's going to be some sense of leaving experience. And there's always going to be some tension. There will always be tension in the mind. So if you like, we could say there are three stages. There's the stage of the average human being, just thinking in terms of me and the world. There's the stage of the good spiritual practitioner. And then there's a stage where you even let go of trying to do anything, get anywhere, even become enlightened. Because that's still an ego project in a way. It's the best possible ego project is becoming enlightened. But it's still relating back to me at the centre of the world. So finally, we're even aiming to let go of that. And when we really let go of that, then there is pure just sitting, there's complete spiritual receptivity, there's, if you like, an open space in the centre of the mandala in which the Buddha, the Yidam, the Bodhisattva can appear and manifest. And there's a total healing of the mandala. There's no sense of separation. And Sangharakshita has said very little about just sitting in itself. There's that early talk on the system of meditation where he talks about just sitting as a kind of counterpoint, kind of balance to structured practice. So he talks about you can practice mindfulness of breathing, just sitting. Metta bhavana, just sitting. Six element practice, just sitting. And that teaching, I think, got a bit lost over the years within the order. But it's important because if you just do structured practice, firstly, your tendency is you're still making your mind work with structured practice. So there's always a sort of subtle tension. Even if you're just trying to move from first dhyana to second dhyana, there's still the subtle tension of trying to take the mind somewhere. So there's never a complete relaxation and letting go, which the mind really enjoys and appreciates and needs. And it's very healing. So in our practice, there needs to be structured practice balanced by complete letting go, just relaxed, open awareness. And then also just sitting is important because it does get us away from this tendency to be feeling that, yes, I'm still not far enough on the path, I've still got to make more effort. Yes, on one level that's fine, but we also need to bring in an element where we're really not trying to do anything, we're not trying to be anybody, going anywhere at all. So Sangharakshita talked about just sitting in that lecture, but all he really said was that when you just sit, you just sit. And last year, Wintour's Publications brought out that wonderful 700-page collection of Bhante's transcripts and all about meditation. And in the entire book, if you look in the index, there are, I think, 7 references to just sitting, 2 of which I can't actually find in the text even. So there are 5 references, but there isn't a section on just sitting. There isn't a section on how you just sit. There isn't a section on its importance. It's not there at all. But there are places where he has talked about it, and I won't give it to you now, but at the end of the morning, we'll leave you by the doors there. We'll leave you an extract from a seminar on Rechungpa's repentance, where Bhante does just talk about the essence of just sitting, and just sitting on the highest level, which is just this complete letting go, this complete relaxation on every level, relaxing even the attempt to get somewhere further and better on the spiritual path. While I'm not saying you should never set your goal or set your direction in terms of doing that, but there are times where we just need to even let go of the sense of anything in the future. We're just staying in the present moment, relaxing completely into it. So the main way in which Sangharakshita has talked about these things is in terms of, say, the greater mandala of complete uselessness, which is a teaching associated with the Ratnaguna Sanchayagata, which is a perfection of wisdom text. And in there he talks about the difference between appropriative ways of functioning and ways of functioning based on vidya, on aesthetic appreciation. So when we're selfing, when we're functioning from me at the centre of my world, then everything around my world is always related to and judged in terms of whether it's valuable or not for me, or what effect it has on me. So yes, some things are valuable, and we give those, we feel that they're important. Some things are uncomfortable or threatening or unpleasant, so we push those away. And then there's a whole big aspect of the mandala which just doesn't seem to relate to our ego project, which we just feel indifferent to. So everything is in terms of appropriation. It's all related back to me and my life and how I'm getting on. Maybe me and mine. I'm not saying, you know, we're just focused on me, but it's all related back to some sense of me. But then with deep practice, there's a sense of letting go, of self-forgetting. And then there's receptivity. And when there's that receptivity, when we're not relating things back to, do they help me, do they not help me, we're just there with things as they are for their own sake. We're there with people as they are for their own sake. And when we're living in that sort of way, there's a sense of beauty to life, which is, there's an aesthetic quality. There's also a sense of spaciousness and a kind of timelessness that starts to appear. Because the ego mandala stuff is always very driven. There's always an element of drivenness. the cock and the snake and the pig are all busy kind of driving around the centre of your mandala, kind of giving them the giving it its motive power. So with just sitting, we're learning to, and spiritual receptivity, we're learning to function in this way of aesthetic appreciation. In meditation, we're appreciating the breath, we're appreciating the body, we're just open to what's there. We're appreciating our feelings and our emotions, the thoughts, appreciating sounds, what we can hear, and going through the day, we're just appreciating the sunlight on the carpet, appreciating the way someone's holding a pen, and so on. There's just that openness. Because without that drivenness and that self-intendency, we're available. We're available to life, and we can be at the service of the Dharma. So our first task on this retreat, very important, is to allow ourselves to relax as much as possible. And when we've done that, then we could allow ourselves to relax some more. And if we get that far, we could allow ourselves to relax even more still. Because it's impossible to be extremely relaxed and really keep that sort of ego mandala firmly in place. You can't do it. To keep the ego mandala going requires constant effort and constant vigilance. But this relaxation that we're looking for isn't just going flop. In modern life, the tendency is to go from driven, hyper-vigilant to flop, flaked out, just lost on the sofa. So what we're looking for is a balance between relaxation and awareness. We're aiming to keep both those factors in play. So we have the awareness without the hypervigilance and drivenness, and we have the relaxation without the dullness and sleepiness and all that. So we're looking for this state where we're just alive in our experience, but no tension, just relaxed, just easy. And a lot of the practice over these next few days is just to notice there's a sort of an ebb and flow that goes on. We notice it through the day. We talk in terms of the ego project and self and so on, but that's wrong. Yeah. I don't actually like talking about sort of ego clinging or self clinging, because it gives a sort of sense that there is a thing, an entity called the ego, the self, that we somehow have to dismantle or trip up in some kind of way in order to free ourselves. Whereas, actually, there, as we know, there's just flow, there's just process. So there's just selfing. And selfing is a way in which we function, a way in which we are created, organizing our experience. So all we have to do is learn not to do that, and then our whole mandala will change. And as there isn't any fixed ego or self, as there is selfing, there are degrees of selfing going on. So we can notice through the day how much or how little we are, so to speak, closing in around a sense of a self or a me. And you'll notice quite a lot of the day, actually, there isn't much of that going on. You know, you're just sitting, looking at the pond and the ducks, and it's all quite quiet in there and quite open. And, you know, you're sitting with a good friend over lunch, and again, it's all just quite easy. And your body's relatively relaxed, and your mind's quite quiet, you're just engaged, you're quite receptive. And then there are other times, you know, perhaps you think, do I want to have a meditation review with Vasantra? Do I have to go and talk about my meditation? I don't know. Where you're suddenly, you're thrown back on yourself, and you suddenly, there's this sense of tension in the body, and a sense of me in here that's now in conflict about what I should do. And it's a completely different feeling altogether. So there's a spectrum of selfing between extremely tense, extremely uptight, just, you know, even though the sun's shining and the ducks are there, I'm just in my own world kind of thinking about whatever it is, to open, easy, taking in all these fantastic people who are around, beautiful place. And through the day, that ebbs and flows. You can notice, and a good way to notice is just to be with your body, partly because being with your body, you're in the present, but also it's a very direct sort of messenger of how much selfing is going on. So what I'd invite you to do as a sort of basic practice over these few days is to relax as much as possible, whilst maintaining a thread of awareness, and just notice that selfing process going on. Because once you recognize how it ebbs and flows, firstly, you start to see the conditions under which it ebbs and flows, and also it breaks apart that sense of somehow that there is a me or a self really in here. You start seeing, no, it's just a way of functioning. It's just a way of functioning, and I can do it, and I do it. But actually, if it's a way of functioning, then I can change it and I don't have to. Okay, that's probably enough talking for now.